Well, you just have to make it your priority. I would tell you, Corey, I mean, there have been times I would be in some part of the world away from Barbados, and I knew that my children were taking part in something that was important to them, and I would make every effort to change the flight to see how I can how I can get back to Barbados just to be there with them. So if you do have that recognition, I would tell you, when my children were first born, the first 3 years I was so very much involved in political activism, that I may even have missed out on some of the important aspects of their life. Fortunately, their mother was there, and excellent mother, and then maybe fortunate for me, I went into the took up the position at the Pan African Commission and took the very active political partisan involvement took a little backseat, and maybe that gave me the breathing room to actually focus even more on my children. But you are so right that as you grow older in life, you come to recognize, and even me, I mean, I spent a lot of time with my children. I was very much the facilitator of their artistic and sporting development and so forth. You know, the mother was very much focused on the academics. But even now, even though I did spend quite a lot of time with my children, you come to regret that you didn't do even more.
So
what you're saying is so true, and I think every mature father will tell the young father that when you look back on your life, what you tend to wish for is that you didn't do even more in terms of, you know, family outings, family
but
gatherings.
But David, I got to interject here. I constantly hear this, right? And for me, it actually has informed. I'm not someone who wants to go forward and look back and regret. So it actually spent the time. No. But for me, how is it that, you know, okay, you're president of the Clement Payne movement. You're doing these things. You need to be at meetings. But you can't be two places at once.
Yeah, but you know something, Corey?
So how do you do it? We got to drill down.
Quite often they would tell you, I would excuse myself from the meeting because I had to go and pick up one of my daughters to take them somewhere. So I would excuse myself. I'd go and tell, you know, and I'll explain to the meeting, I have to do this. And then I come back. So you just have to
make it priority number one.
You have to make it a priority, and if it is a priority, you will find a way.
I know the other dad's chomping at this, but let me deal with the other two things, and then let me move on, because I got some questions here building on both on WhatsApp and on the chat. This other thing about lavish love and attention, I want to say definitely that is major. In doing family counseling and youth counseling, one of the things I realized, the lack of attention at home creates massive problems on the outside, right? Massive, massive problems. So I want to thank you on that. Now, in terms of building the self-esteem, you spoke about that. And even listening to your daughter, Najuma, if you had not done that, I think the result may have been a lot different listening to her. So again, I want parents to see live and direct the importance. The last thing I'll talk about, though, is this 1-5 ratio. And I think we actually have it the other way around, where it's almost 10-1. For every 10 negative things a parent, teacher, authority says to a child, there may be one commendation behind that. That has been my experience observing a lot right across the board, that we tend, if you do well, okay, that's what you're supposed to do. But if you do wrong at all, the heaven, the stars, the moon, everything coming down. So I want to actually underline that as a recipe for success. My producer wants to say something. Come in, Dennis.
Well, thank you very much, Corey. Good morning to you, and a happy Father's Day to you, and happy Father's Day to those listening. David gave me a nice segue there because he talked about interrupting what he was doing to take care of his children. So let me interrupt what you're doing and say good morning to the person on the line. Good morning to you. Caller?
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Right. There you go. I want to interrupt Mr. Lane. Could you say that again? I have his family on the line. His wife and his children.
So familiar.
To interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
There's daddy listening. Stay happy.
Can I speak?
So, okay.
Hey, good morning.
Let's
get it out. Did they hear it from the radio, please?
Daddy can hear it. Daddy can say it for you. Say happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, look, this is the evidence here that sometimes, you know, you have the family home and you have to be, so it's just trying to be two or three different places at the same time. But I do take David Commission's point that, you know, you have to make it the number one priority. So I guess they're here able to join me while I'm here on here. Well, totally unexpected. thank you all very much. And I hope you all have a wonderful day and I'll see you all in a few hours.
And don't burn the lunch.
Yeah, don't burn the light. Whoa.
I know you're lost for words. let me.
Fabian, yes. Fabian, let's move over to you, yes.
You see, parents, we spend so much time focusing on the children and what we need to do for the children. But there's a saying, you cannot give something if you don't have anything to give. Okay, if you want to give away 15 oranges, you ain't got no 15 oranges, you can't give anything. You can't give them. I, as you mentioned, I'm involved in parenting training and sessions and so forth. Now, I try to encourage parents to focus on their selves. Now, we have many parents who, the issues that they experience with parenting come because of a number of the challenges that they would have had probably throughout their lives and even throughout their childhood. And I encourage parents to try to do a lot of reflecting and understand themselves, even from their own type of value system, and set goals in terms of what it is you want to see in your child. Now, as mentioned before there by our Muslim friends, you have to set the example. As a parent, you have to set that example. Like for me, I always knew both of my parents living in the same household. They got married in their teenage years. They went to the same secondary school, you know. And that is something that I wanted for my family and children because that is what I grew up in. I don't know anything about any other family. You know, I don't know anything about a stepmother or stepfather. That was never my reality. So I thought that, you know, I needed to create such an environment for my children. And that is exactly what I set out to do. It wasn't easy. It's never an easy task. But once you know what it is you want to achieve, you know the type of persons you want to raise, because that is exactly what you're doing, you're influencing lives, then you set out to do that. Now, doing that will not come easy. I mean, like for me, I grew up in Nelson Street. All right? And I need to be very honest and frank. I grew up in an environment that was very hostile. I mean, every day somebody was like casting one another or fighting or something or the other. And that was the environment. So I grew up with a little aggression in me. And even as a parent, sometimes I think that I'm a little hard on my son. And that is probably how I grew up, you know, being in that type of rough environment. So I have to take a step back sometimes, do some introspection, and ask myself a number of questions, you know. Was it warranted? You know, what can I do to improve my own behavior, and focusing on me, because then he watches me. So once I focus on me, sometimes if I have to go back to him and say, you know, to Kerry, I apologize for doing X, Y, and Z. You know, I do it, but with caution, because don't get me wrong, some children can wait a ransom. You have to know how, and you have to select how you're going to approach it. But at the same time, it shows that child that, you know what, daddy can say a story, I can say a story. And I'm raising two young men. They are boys who will become men, and that is how I see it. So as from now, I am teaching them to apologize, to accept responsibility. You know, we're involved in the church. You know, we pray together at night. We read our Bible stories, and you try to get certain values, try to get them live in a particular way. You do that. Now, in this modern environment, I will tell you, you know, with COVID and everything, and for the last couple of months, 2 months, I think they were home, I find that they've been using a lot of technology. And that has depleted or interfered with their interpersonal skills. And I found with the two boys who are bickering at one another, they're quarreling one another a lot more. And my wife said, you know what? They are not getting enough time to play, to interact and build those skills, you know, because they miss school, they miss their friends. So what we do is that we take away the technology and allow them to sit down and play with blocks, color, go outside, and, you know, so that they can have that interpersonal, that interaction with each other to play, understand, I mean, quarrel one another, and then get over it. See how to deal,
That's very important.
And that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Now, I want Najuma Salima, I know Takir is on his way home, so he's not on the line, but I want all of us, he's back there. I want y'all to feel free to jump into the discussion. I don't just want to only speak to the fathers. So wherever they're saying something that you may say, okay, that's not really how it worked, Dad. Or actually, yes, I want to thank you for that. Feel free to jump in. Now, on the line, there's two discussions going on the online and the WhatsApp. One of the people here, Fabian, is saying is, this speaker is crazy. You never apologize to your children. And then there's one is saying, parents of yesteryear never apologize. So I just want to get some quick feedback from you guys in terms of apologizing to your children and so on, because definitely that is one of the discussions occurring off air right now.
It'd be good to hear from the children.
Yeah. Let's start with Najuma, eh? What are your thoughts about parents apologizing?
I definitely agree that parents should apologize to children when they have demonstrated that they've fallen short of something that they've promised. I think that it should be followed with an explanation, because I find if you continually apologize for things that are not in your control, then you can, after a well-raised person, raise children to be a bit maybe too haughty or too self-indulgent, persons who believe that things are owed to them, and may become more selfish persons as well, where they believe things are always to be given, but they're never to give or never. And when I say give, I don't necessarily mean give physically. I mean also giving leeway, emotional leeway. So I think with respect to emotional intellect, I think on both ends, it helps to foster a more mature individual where not only does the parent realize their role, but also the child is able to understand the perspective of an adult who tried. So I do remember my father apologizing quite a number of times, but I honestly can't think of any big issue that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. What my question was going to be with respect to the discussion before was, I just wanted to know if any of the fathers had any strategies for how they managed to remain motivated and energetic and stave off the fatigue of parenting, because it is a very intense exercise, and it goes on for a number of years. I know that I've seen some parents who seem to give up by age 8 or 10, where I see persons who come into the clinic, and if their child isn't doing what they should, let's say with asthma, and they're saying, well, he should take this medication, it's not my duty to make sure I keep reminding him, behaving as though this 8-year-old is an adult who has this autonomy and this intellectual ability to know why he should do what he should do. So I've seen the other side, where parents have almost given up on children when they believe them to be mature enough to know better, at an age where anyone who knows about childhood and adolescence and the maturity of a brain over time will recognize that this is a little bit much to expect for someone so young. So I was just wondering how the fathers also felt about how they continue to push despite the number of years of investment.
Giving up on my children was never an issue for me, because these children always made me so proud, you know. So I guess I had a very, very positive experience as a father where that is concerned. But over the years, not drawing from my own lived experience, but observing people and situations, one of the things I learned is that you, regardless of whatever disappointments a parent may have in relation to a child, he must never give up on that child. And like Najuma, as an attorney at law, I mean, she is seeing it from the perspective of a medical doctor working in the public health system, I've seen it from the perspective of an attorney at law. Too many people do give up on their children because, you know, the various disappointments they may have had with the child. But that is a no-no. One, you cannot give up. You cannot give up on that child that you brought into this world, no matter how difficult it is. You know, your job is to persist. The only time hope is ever truly lost is when you give up. Once you don't give up, there is still hope that you're going to have, you know, a good outcome. So, again, that's another lesson I would like to leave with the young fathers. Resolve in your own mind that irrespective of whatever disappointments that child may give you, that you as a parent will never give up on that child.
As a parent, you should always consider your children as your greatest assets, not your motor car or your building and so on. And so you need to work towards your assets. You need to nurture them, and you need to find pleasure in bringing them up. Because just imagine you are sitting down and watching your kid, you know, crawling and then walking slowly. These are some of the pleasures that you will never, ever achieve if you did not have a child. I think another thing for me, my faith teaches me that it is my duty that I need to bring up my children in the best moral upright way. But I need to do it also by setting an example, too. Let me give you an example. When you remember when Lotto first came on, it was a big thing. Oh, you know, if you buy a ticket, then you have a chance. I remember we were shopping at Carlton Supermarket one night, and my daughter Salima was with me. And she said, oh, my dad gave me, I think it was either $1 or $2. And there she go and bought a Lotto ticket. And then I saw it, you know. So I walked slowly to her. And they say, you know, Salima, gambling is against our religion. So what I would like you to do, tear up the ticket and put it in that garbage can over there. And so she did exactly as I told her. And I think that's it. The subject came to an end.
I hope those numbers didn't play.
this is one of my own experiences. We need to set a proper moral platform for our children, too. Because parenting, as I said, is a learning process. Grandparenting, you just wish sometimes that you had grandchildren rather than you had children first. But that is by the way. But it is, parenting is such a fantastic pleasure that one would have as long as you need to give time. You have to give time to your children.
Sabri, let me put this one to you, and I'll take a break and then come to you, Fabian. But this one says, Sabir, I humbly suggest that we do not bring up our children like how we were raised. Parents of that time had some very bad child rearing practices. Some, not all. You say fathers must use their experience on growing up to chart what they must do. What if your father was not around or you had no positive role models? How does that man chart what they will do? Do you just plan to do the exact opposite of what happened to you? And that's one that is directed to you.
Each individual would have had different experience as a child. And I know sometimes many fathers, actually many parents also, take up that particular example. Some of them usually be negative and then and pass it on to the children or deal with the children in the manner how their parents or their father would have dealt with them. I have never done that. I have been very, very lucky. My father has been very gentle, kind, understanding person. And he dealt with it in a way that he practiced what he preached. And so we would see him doing things. So he never say, you have to do this. Of course, there are certain situation where a father has to, as we say, put his foot down. Yes, you have to do that. There are times you have to do that. Maybe these days are putting our feet down. So that is why maybe sometimes we have certain problems that we have now.
Okay. I want to thank you. You're listening to this special Father's Day edition on Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipe, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. For building supplies, big or small, at Williams
Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Okay, we'll pick back up with you, Fabian, because I know you wanted to have your say as well.
Yeah, you were asking about persons that lose hope. Corey, when I get up in the morning and I see these children, I mean, there's nothing in this world. There is nothing in this world that comes before my children. You understand? I mean, that is the reality. No group, no job, no person, no material thing. And I think that as fathers, as parents, that is how we have to see our children, you know, as mentioned, as our greatest assets. I mean, there's nothing that comes before my children. My children, number one. I also have a very, very, very busy schedule. But, Corey, everybody that is involved in my child's development, from school back, they can tell you I'm present at school, I'm present at all of his activities. I make that time. I put it in my schedule like if it was a meeting. You understand? And I attend not only one, but I attend all my children, the activities. I make sure I fit that in the schedule. If I have to get out of a meeting, I will do so. But also, it is important that parents understand the developmental stages of children. Children develop at different rates, and various things are expected of them at different ages. So an 8-year-old leaving all the responsibility to do the homework and get up on its own and get ready for school, I mean, that is the parent's responsibility. So parents have to understand that children will be children, you know. And it is good to do some reading. We don't have all the answers. We do not have a manual. I know some persons would have grown up without a father, but they are father figures. Some of us would have grown up with bad examples, but you know, as you grow older, with age comes wisdom. And you know what to take and what not to take. And you can treat parenting like if you get a cell phone and put a manual, you're going to research, you're going to find ways to manage the device, you're going to find ways to get through. And that is it for parenting as well. You can reach out to other people, to other persons that you probably would have seen raise some what you would consider in your mind wonderful children, successful, and ask some questions, you know. So what was it, what did you do, how did you do it, and try to include some of those skills into your everyday life. So I mean, it is, while it is a task, while it is difficult, while there's no real manual or no real way to do it, support is always important, and support can come in many ways. And as adults, You can differentiate what are the good skills to keep and what are the not so good skills. Some people are against things like parenting classes. Parenting classes don't teach you to become a parent. What they do is that they give you extra skills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a carpenter with a toolbox. You have your hammer and your chalk and dust and all these things, lines, and then somebody come and give you a laser. You know, somebody come and give you a new tool. Some days, laser may not work, so you use the line and the chart. I mean, you'd use the tools based on the situation and circumstance. It's not a case where somebody's telling you what to do, but give you extra tools to use to become a better parent as you groom that life, as they grow up in this society.
Corey.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I take Fabian's point that people can go and search, and you can go and do your own research and so forth, and that is good. And I had to do some of that as a young father. But I think we should make it easier. We should make it more of a priority to try to share insights using the mass media, using educational and public educational institutions to try to share insights and perspectives about techniques for parenting. I remember there used to be a program on television, CBC, My Child and I, you know, which attempted to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's so important because sometimes people just don't know. I'll give you one a little anecdote. I remember once just outside my building there on Crumpton Street, I saw this woman with about four children, and she was crossing the street to come to the bus stop, and she was harshly rebuking one of the children and the little child, and the child burst into tears, and she was harshly reprimanding this child. And I made it my duty to go over to her, you know, and in a very polite way, I said, "Excuse me, ma'am. I've been a parent for many years. I would just like to share a little insight with you." And I began to tell her, you know, yes, occasionally a parent will have to chastise a child and so forth, but you have to be so careful that you don't damage the self-esteem of that child. And the same, well, my mantra was that for every one occasion that you find that you have to chastise that child, you must find five occasions and five reasons to praise and congratulate that child, because you don't want to do damage to that child's self-esteem. And she listened to me. One would have thought that she might have been aggressive, and of course she had seemed to be that kind of person, but she gave me a patient listening, and at the end of it she said, "Thank you, sir." You know, and I'm sure that nobody had ever said that to her before. So I think that, you know, we know that a lot of the problems we have in Barbados, a lot of the social problems, a lot of the problems with crime, with morality, that you can trace them right back.
You just write my mind.
Family.
Connecting the dots. No, they're really jumping in here. Connecting the dots. Because I'm sitting here and I'm remembering your 1-5 ratio. I am looking at my comments. I'm looking at the calls. And I'm recognizing something. Auntie America just sent me some Z's. Now, when it comes to criticism on this program, if we have to be calling and complaining about the government or complaining about potholes, water, or so on, especially your attorney at law, if we have opened a program here talking about lawyers, I remember coming here there and every single line went lit up. People can come out. Now, today we're asking people to share positively about the fathers or share their experiences. People are reluctant to do that. So when it comes to speaking in the negative, because people do not make the connection between fatherlessness, the poor parenting, and all the social ills we see in our society, from wealth creation to crime, to behavior in school, violence in school, all of it is linked together. And I want to make that link today. And I want to call on people to call. I want fathers to call. I want people to call about the fathers, share their experiences. I wanted to have a discussion with you guys, but I also want to bring in the general public. I'm going to read a couple messages, and then I'm going to let the discussion continue. This one says, "Corey, please tell Uncle Alva Happy Father's Day. He lives in Bryan Avenue, right next to Wesley. If you can, please do so." This one says, "I want to salute all working class fathers who, like my father, worked very hard to raise his children very well. My dad's father died when my father was an infant. My father's formal schooling finished at 11, but he determined while still in his early 20s that he will have all his children and raise in one place. There were 9 of us. He was there from birth of the first. He had to jump on his bicycle to fetch the midwife until the last left home. So yes, working class men with very little education are also excellent fathers." This one says, "Good day, Corey. As I type this message, I'm cooking for my children as a single father, but really hope you can shout out another single father by the name of Jefferson Burt, father of national athlete Jamal Burt. Jefferson has not only been a single father for a number of years, he became a qualified coach in order to better coach his son in athletics. It doesn't end there. Jefferson also learned to design, cut, and sew in order to make his son's track wear. So, shout out to an extraordinary father." And I want to thank them for that. So, on the point that we have to look at fatherness, fathers and their roles in society, I actually want to the fathers also to share with us the role their father would have played in their lives in making them the father they are today.
Yeah. For me, Corey, my dad has always been a very ambitious person. Always involved in business. Anybody that knows my father, he's well known, you know, always involved, always going, always have some idea. And I found that is me, you know, I always have an idea. If I have it, I can run with it, very persistent. And these are things that I would have gone see my father doing, working really, really hard to provide for us. And I do the same. I mean, when I sit and I look at my life, I mean, it's pretty much a carbon copy of the extent with which my father used to work, you know, from one business to another business and just working, you know, and that is me, just like that. And I think that seeing that, I really want my son to understand me. You spoke to him earlier, and he said, you know, I let him do stuff over and over, and I want him to know that life is not easy, you know. I mean, we can handle all the easy things, but what distinguishes us is how we overcome the difficult task and being consistent and sticking to what it is we want to accomplish. And, you know, as a parent, that is one of the things I really, really would like to see coming out in my children.
One of the things I want to touch on before the rest continue is this idea of the children watching you. Now, there's a contradiction, and a lot of parents ask me about this. Now, you would have grown up in Nelson Street. You say you yourself observe a lot of aggression and so on, but you were able to buck that, yeah, right? Now, at the same time, you're concerned your children are watching you, so why don't they buck that? Now, I want you to kind of clarify the difference between someone who grows up in this environment and is determined or able to do something completely different and someone who says, well, look, I am a creature of my environment. I am a result of my circumstance.
I was one. I always had a vision that, you know, I want to do big things. Growing up, my mom would always tell me, boy, she knows that I would say this. I tell her, I would always say, she would tell me, man, you just dream too big. I mean, I didn't blame her for saying that because, you know, that's probably her reality and how she probably grew up. And I would always tell her, mommy, my dreams are bigger than this world, and I will accomplish all. And that has been my motivation. So probably it's my mindset, you know, being part of the culture, being part of the environment. But I always knew that I wanted more. And the only way that I could achieve more was if I pursued at the point in time my studies. And even doing that was not the easiest, because I'll be very, very honest. I'm very hesitant to say this, but I am one, I don't like reading. I never really liked reading, because growing up, reading was something, I remember there was a time when I could not read. And because of that, I don't know what it did to me, but I read if I have to. Don't get me wrong, I'm a good reader, and I do read when I have to read. If I have to research, I do my research, but it's not something that I would do in my pleasure time, or just, you know, just to pick up a book and do it. These days, probably doing a lot more because of what I'm involved in, but, you know, but I found that was my way out, you know, my education, having pushed and go to college and then move on from there. And as you go, I always want to get higher, I always want to do better, and that was just my spirit, you know, always want to excel, always want to be better, always want to reach the highest I possibly can. And I don't think that it is something that the average guy that's sitting on the block or thinking as if, you know, life dealt me a bad hand. You know, I think we all have that potential. It's just to have the right support and someone to help, I don't know, massage the mind to think a particular way. A lot of the men that I see are influenced by music and other people in a real negative way, but once you surround yourself with positivity and people that are looking to move forward, I am telling you, for some reason, you will definitely, that will become part of your reality. And that is it for me, you know. Look for the good support where it is available.
All right, so I want to hear from David now and Sabir in terms of the role their dads played in their lives.
Corey, I was very, very fortunate. I am the son of Reverend Vivian Komishong, a Methodist minister. And so I grew up in a home full of love, full of Christian love. My father was a very warm human being, and he had four sons. We were all four boys. My father had no difficulty in expressing affection for his children. My father would hug us, give us a kiss, that kind of thing. And so I had a kind of ideal upbringing so far as my parents were concerned. One of the things my father stressed to all of his children was the value of education. You know, my father would make it clear to us as a Methodist minister, he had no wealth, he had no material property to leave to us, but he would ensure that we all had a good education, and it was up to us, you know, to make full use of that education. So I grew up in a home in which the value of education was very deeply entrenched, and I was able to develop that own culture in my own home now as a father. And I tell you, I'll give you this little anecdote. It might embarrass Najuma a little bit, but Najuma has won many, many awards in life. But the award that I personally am most proud of, you know, that she has won, is that when she graduated from Charles F. Broome Primary, she was given an award by the school, the only child who got this award. And the award was that in 7 years at that school, she was the only student who had never missed a single day of school in her entire primary school career. So it means that even if she was feeling sick, she did not stay home. She went to school. And that's because the valuing of education was such a deeply entrenched principle in her family life that is how we saw it. To miss one day of schooling was a tragedy that was to be avoided at all costs. Well, I can tell you, she went on to become a Barbados scholar, you know, but that was something that I can trace right back to my father, because if there was one thing he drummed into our heads, it was the importance of education.
Education. It was the way of social mobility, the way upward. Sabir, jump in. I also have another question for you as you answer your question in terms of the role your father played. Persons are asking about your challenges, specifically to the fact that you're growing up in a society that shares majority of a different faith. So speak about the influence of your father, and also speak to those, well, two different WhatsApps coming in asking about that.
Yes, sure. I was born in India, and my father first went to England and then came to Barbados. Thank God he left England and came to Barbados. I was about two or three years old. I grew up with my grandfather, grandmother, and all the extended family in India. And then I came to Barbados when I was about 10 years old. And again, it was my father and myself and my uncle, which, you know, is Indian. They always call their father, friends, uncle anyway. But so my mother came maybe 6 months after me. But that love, my father, you know, always made sure that I am comfortable, and he would always hug me up. And then my mother came afterwards. And that hugging up thing, I still continue. So as young as I am now, and as old as my children are, I still hug them up and kiss them up and tell them I love you. What I am saying is that your children does not have to make the first move to come and hug you up and kiss you. You can, when you see your kids, your daughter, your son, you know, hug them up, you know, love them. And if they are far from you, give them a little ring and tell them that I love you. It goes a long way. It keeps that relationship, that love fresh, active in the hearts of your children too. And I think extended families, of course, is unfortunate now in this modern time, but extended families plays a very important role. We can still maintain that relationship with our extended family, especially now with today's technology and so on. And we also need to educate and our children about the extended families that they have, because it brings that bond, create that bond and that love, and that knowledge of who is my uncle, who is my father, aunt, or who is my father's sister, so on. Growing up in Barbados, when I came to Barbados, I was like about 10 years old, and I went to Wesley Hall School. And we used to live like stone's throw from Wesley Hall School. And I think I had a fantastic time. Here, an Indian boy, good-looking boy, smart, with pretty hair. All the girls are crazy, you know, coming up here and so on. And not too far from Wesley Hall, I had these school, I think, Goddards, and those had for the, from St. John and so on. So they had these white girls, too. So I had the best of the both worlds. Had the girls from Wesley Hall, and then I had the white girls from the other side. You know, everybody touching me up and crazy about me. But I think, overall, Barbadians are some of the most fantastic people on the face of the earth. No one ever tell me about my religion. It was always Sabir. So I think from the time, you know, that I am the one who is building bridges among the community in Barbados. But now I realize that I was building bridges from the time I came from India, because no one ever questioned my faith. No one ever questioned what race I am. And I think that all the time, that is the situation with me. I think one of the reasons could be that when the first East Indian came, there were no indentureship in Barbados, by the way. You know, he bought stuff from Swan Street merchants and went around selling in the countryside. But that relationship was built back in 1910. And so Barbadian always viewed the East Indian a very positive light, and I think it continues even up to today. So you see all around the world there's Islamophobia and so on. We don't have anything like that in Barbados. As a matter of fact, I am bragging and I am challenging anyone to produce a society like Barbados, where Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Indians, Chinese are living in peace and harmony.